and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, author of The Company That Solved Healthcare, The Serograph Prescription, John Torrenes. Former CEO of Serograph, a company based in Wisconsin, John Torrenes was recorded at a Commonwealth North Forum in Anchorage on October 11th.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone. And welcome to this October briefing from Commonwealth North. I'm Mike Young-Rice, the board president for this year. Let me introduce our head table. To my immediate right is John Torrenes, the former CEO of Serograph, a Wisconsin-based graphic parts manufacturing business, and our speaker today. To his right is Susan Humphrey Barnett, who is the Area Operations Administrator for Providence Health and Services Alaska, a business member of Commonwealth North, and a sponsor of today's event. Thank you very much to you and to Providence. To her right is Ward Holberg, the Chief Medical Officer of the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Thank you very much. Then is Representative Wes Keller, from the Alaska State House of Representatives, Chair of the Health and Social Services Committee. Yet to his right is Commissioner Becky Holtberg from the Department of Administration. Thank you very much. And then finally, we would have Tom Nicewander. Dr. Nicewander is a clinical dean of the WAMI program in Alaska. He is not just a Commonwealth North board member, but my predecessor is president here, and also a sponsor of today's event. An unusually high-powered and distinguished head table. And please welcome our head table today. Those of you who are familiar with Commonwealth North's proceedings know that we do provide a question period, and that the way that the questions are presented is through these cards, which are on all of your tables. We'd ask that if you have questions for today's speaker, that you write them out, you raise your hand, and one of these folks is going to come by and give it to me. And I, as is my practice, will try to pick the hardest questions to put to the speaker from among those that I receive. Commonwealth North and the Alaska Care Commission have invited John Torrenes to address the cost of care and explain how his company tackled the hyperinflation that plagues the nation's healthcare delivery system and offers his blueprint for controlling costs while improving care. We all want to see how that holy grail could possibly work out. This has been something that Commonwealth North has focused on quite a bit. We have had a panel of private sector businesses at an earlier briefing just a couple of months ago. Some of you may have attended regarding how to bring down the cost of providing health care. Let me now invite John Torrenes to the podium, remind him to keep his mouth close to this microphone, I guess, and to speak about his success in dealing with health care so that perhaps we can learn from him. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I come from another northern state, and it's sort of become the epicenter for this collision, this cataclysmic collision on an unsustainable trend in health costs. And what are you going to do about it when the costs hit the wall? And you'll know that we had the third recall of a governor in the history of the United States. Scott Walker survived, and we had the passage of the infamous Act 10, which took away a collective bargaining for state employees on benefits. And it was the result of that unsustainable trend where the cost got so painful that something had to happen. Despite mainly what happened in Wisconsin as a result of that is cost shifting to the public employees, but Act 10 did free all the local units of government and state government to get innovative. And so the revolution in Wisconsin has just begun. Of course, the The Act 10 is being challenged in the courts. It's already been to our Supreme Court once. It's going there again. But it's a microcosm of the tremendous pressures that get caused by hyperinflation on a set of costs. Given that backdrop, I just want to thank you for having me here today and indulging me in my obsession to bring some private sector reforms to some kind of control of this vast chunk of our economy. I'm going to start today with a bottom line, a disclaimer, and an apology. The bottom line, and there's a lot of business guys in the room, so that's why I start there, is that I was able to stand up in front of my employees a year ago going into 2012 and tell them we were going to have no premium increases. And that was the sixth time in 9 years that we've been able to say that. And we share the costs about 75-25 with our employees. It's a compact. We're in it together. And for the sixth time in 9 years, we've had no premium increase. I might add we've hit our stop loss four times so far in 2012, so I'm probably not going to be able to pull that off in 2013. So we've been, we have about 410 people. We're non-union. We have a pretty good trust relationship with the employees, so we're able to move pretty fast on good ideas for managing health costs. And so that we become what I would call an incubator for good ideas. And so a lot of people come to us with their good ideas, and we try to put them to work and come up with a better business model. We have 410 people, about 1,000 on our 1,000 lives, and that is the group of people that is in this journey with me to get this under control. We've been able to hold the cost to about little less than 3% a year for the last 9 years, and that's in contrast to the national average. It's up 8+. It used to be in the 90s. It was in the double digits even through the first part of the aught decade. Lately, it's been trending downward, and the pundits and the economists, and they can't quite figure out what's going on to bring this down. They say, well, maybe it's the Great Recession. People are spending less on health care, and certainly some of that's true. But we're down, I think last year, according to some of the numbers I've seen, the inflation rate was in the 6-8%. I even saw one this year from Mercer that said it's going to come in at 4% in 2012. Well, I would submit to the pundits and the economists that what's going on is there's a revolution going on in the private sector that is starting to get a handle on this issue. So the benchmark, I think, I travel around the country and I talk to lots of CEOs and lots of business people who are trying to wrestle with this thing. And the sort of best practice, so the number you should have in your head about where you should be if you're doing it right, is right around $9,000 per employee. And that's right around where Serigraph has been. I don't think we're going to be there when I assess the damages on 2012, but we're right around that 9,000 number. I've seen full health plans at really good companies with great health plans as low as 7,500. That is in contrast to the national average of about $1,500 per employee, and in contrast to most public bodies that are north of $20,000 per employee. So there's a lot of money at stake here. And my company, had we stayed on our old trend line, and by the way, we were right on the trend line with the national average until we got serious about healthcare management, we save about $2 million a year. And we probably couldn't have gotten through the Great Recession without that savings. If you're an accounting type or a financial type, you know, you can take $2 million in additional cash flow, put a multiple of 5 on it, and we've added $10 million to the enterprise value of Serigraph. The disclaimer, unlike a lot of people in this industry, and it's a huge industry, it's now 18% of the U.S. economy, $2.7 trillion, heading to $5 trillion about 10 years out. It's growing very fast. I'm not one of those guys. There are a lot of smart people in the healthcare industry, many of them in this room today. So I'm not a provider, I'm not an insurance guy, I'm not a healthcare economist, I'm not an academic, I'm not a consultant. I'm not a politician trying to fix this thing from the top down with mandates, and I'm not an expert on PPACA, the new law. What I am, the only credibility I got comes from being a payer, so I have a little different perspective on this thing than the rest of those guys. We pay $4.5 million a year, and back in 2003, it was $5.5 million. We were a little bigger company in terms of employment. We were looking at a 15% increase in our health bill. and we just couldn't stand it. It was going to $800,000 in additional costs in 2004. And so we just simply had to do something about it. We started to look at health costs as the metastasizing health costs as a manageable issue. And we realized that we had some assets to bring to bear on this thing. We're students of management. We study it all the time. We're empirical. We try things out and see if they work. And we're a learning organization. And so we said, why aren't we applying what we know about management to this part of our activities? So we set out to do that. I had been in a debate with the health insurers in the state. I'd been on a bunch of panels saying, hey, we can't stand this. We can't stand this. What are we going to do about it? And I finally would get red in the face with a guy named Larry Rambo, who was the head of Humana in Wisconsin. And he was supposed to be a broker representing me, representing other companies on getting control of these costs, and it wasn't happening. It was going like this. So he finally came back and said, John, this was mid, early 2003, you know, he said, they just passed the HSA law in 2002. We're going to do something. We're going to put all of Humana's employees, 17,000 employees, on an HSA plan, a consumer-driven health plan, high deductible, offset by an HSA. So all during the year, I kept asking him, how's it going, how's it going, how's it going? And about mid-year, he said, it looks like, John, we're going to come in at 4.5% inflation versus the 15 that everybody else was looking at. And I said, well, you know, if you're a CEO, you sometimes don't have perfect information. You got to make decisions. We had a desperate problem. So we took the leap, and we became an early mover on consumer-driven healthcare on January 1st, 2004, one of the first in the country to do it. It was uncharted territory. I had to put $2 million up front to fund this thing. We put about $1 million into the HRA accounts, our commitment to it, and we put another $1 million into lowering the premiums to incentivize people to go to our then high deductible, which was $750. So it was a $2 million bet that we could get behavior to change. And I was nervous about it. I was nervous for a couple of reasons. I thought, well, number one, it's a little draconian. You know, although we made it voluntary to move to the high deductible, we might get a union-esque kind of backlash. And number two, we were betting on behavior change. Would it really change? And about 6 months in, we did a snapshot on utilization. And sure enough, our utilization was down about 17%. And I sort of figured that might happen because when I was in the Marine Corps, I just learned from your experiences on Friday nights we had a happy hour, and they used to serve martinis for 10 cents. And occasionally I was over-served. So when stuff is cheap or free, it gets over-utilized. And so we're on that great piece of human knowledge. We took the plunge, and sure enough, it worked. I would like to sort of submit to you that, you know, no matter what you're doing in a company, you can't get to the promised land if you don't have the full engagement of your troops, of your people. So we had done it before when we went to total quality management. It has to be everybody from the receptionist to the CEO who is worried about quality and getting rid of defects. If you want to be customer intimate, same story. Everybody in the organization has to respond when the customer has a need. When we went into lean disciplines about 8 years ago, the very essence of the lean movement is engaging, first of all, educating people on problem-solving techniques, and then deploying them in the cross-disciplinary teams to solve problem after problem after problem in the company. The denominator here is engagement. You got to get your people engaged. And so I simply did the same thing when we went into management of this complex issue of health and healthcare costs. I said, help me manage it. That's the mantra in our company. Help us run the company. In your area of responsibility, assume you A, have the responsibility, and B, the authority to fix problems. So we did that. And there have been several studies, psychological studies, that show that the engagement is the key piece of this whole thing. You got to get your people, the culture in your organization change, so your people are engaged with their own health and with their health cost management. I had none of this stuff I find to be very profound, by the way. It's just common sense. But as somebody said at the table just now, it's uncommon common sense. And so these ideas just sort of come to you. So I was trying to think, why is it that that the employer can have more of an impact on this than, say, an insurer or even a provider in many cases? And I think the essence of it is that I have a very, very long-term relationship with my employees. It's not uncommon for people to retire after a 40-year career at Serigraph. It happens a couple times a year. About a third of our people are in our 25-year club. So the employee and his family have a long-term relationship with themselves regarding health, but so do I. We're in it together. Now, compare that to an insurance company that has a transactional relationship. There's zeros and ones. It's a short-term relationship. And ditto with the way a lot of the big healthcare providers have set themselves up to do business these days. You're literally in and out with a 6 or 8 minute visit with a primary care doc, and then you're whisked off to the specialist of need at that time. It's a transactional relationship more than it is a long term. So if I look at my employees, and let's say the average company has a $10,000 price tag on every employee for healthcare, and he's got a 40-year career, that's a $400,000 mutual relationship over the course of that person's career. So when people, when the politicians at the top start talking about taking employers out of healthcare, I go, be careful what you ask for, because I think the great reforms are going to come from the employers working in harness with their own employees. Okay, lastly, the apology. Actually, it's a class action apology for all the CEOs in the country, including me, who let this mess happen on the economic side of healthcare. Now, first, I want to stipulate that the medical side of healthcare in the United States is often brilliant. And I got a steel hip and a titanium hip with a ceramic coating, and I'm going to ski the Birkebeiner again this year. So that's a minor miracle. And I'm sure every one of you in your families has such miraculous stories about what the medical side of medicine does in the United States. Most of the innovations in medicine in the world come from the U.S., 80% of them. But the economic side is a disaster. It's just chaos. And there's an old golden rule. He who has the gold rules, I'm a CEO, I got the gold, I'm writing the checks. And so we let this happen. And it was the disengagement of the C-suite, delegating this off to their HR department, even though it's probably the third biggest bucket of costs in any company, that let this happen. We didn't trust the marketplace to put some discipline into pricing and the delivery of healthcare. We didn't trust our employees to help. We made them passive recipients of a really strange system of accountability in terms of who pays and who's responsible for the cost of healthcare. We didn't apply our management expertise to the delivery model. We watched as our vendors, I don't know that it's happened so much in Alaska, but in most of the country, watched our vendors vertically integrate the whole supply chain all the way from primary care to hospice. You'll notice I'm using business terms and concepts today because that's how I come at this thing, a little differently than the wonks would. So we let them vertically integrate our supply chain. I would never let any vendor do that to me in any other sector of my business. And so we let all that happen, and we got the result we got. So before I move on, though, I want to make a little amendment to that class action apology. The C-suite is getting involved, and that's sort of the positive, upbeat side of my message today. Go back 9 years, there were only a few of us payers that were looking at quality measures and different ways to slice and dice the healthcare equation. Today, the C-suites around the country have all figured it out, and they're jumping in spades. So it's a hallelujah, about time, and guess what? The inflation trend is bending downward, and I am sure that it's the reforms that are happening in the private sector, which is about 55% of the pay, that's causing that to happen. So the financial backdrop to all this, of course, and you all know it, and by the way, I have a wish. I wish Wisconsin had a commission like you have here. We don't have anybody trying to pull together all of the elements that go into delivering health care and look at them in chunks and pieces and as a system. That doesn't happen in any other state I've been in besides Alaska. There may be some others out there, but I'm not aware of them. But anyway, you also, therefore, because you have this commission, you know the financial backdrop, and it affects every level of our society. In our area, school districts are laying off teachers and music coaches and nurses, and the school districts are literally insolvent or busted prior to Act 10. I might add that since Act 10, some of the school districts have moved, they do the cost shifting, then they go self-insured, and now they're putting going consumer-driven, and now some of the school districts in Wisconsin and Indiana, I might add, are moving into their own on-site clinics. And so you're starting to see a tremendous amount of savings. Our school district has so much money, they don't know what to do with it. And this is all in the last couple of years. They had $1.5 million surplus. They put it into deferred, they took care of some deferred maintenance issues. Municipalities are cutting back their services across the country. A majority of the state governments are running in the red. Wisconsin was running in the red at a $3.6 billion deficit before Act 10. The national deficit runs at a trillion plus a year, and if you did a root cause analysis, I'm sure you'd find that the benefits issue, the entitlement issues, are the ones that are causing the insolvency at the federal level. Corporate bottom lines are being really beat up by health costs. I could write another book on how do you do business with bankrupt or near bankrupt companies. Any common denominator here? Chrysler, General Motors, Visteon, Delphi, they're all my customers, and they all went under, or virtually under, and the big part of it was the overhang of benefits onto the cost of a car. Medical bills are now the number one cause of personal bankruptcy in the United States. We're crowding out all kinds of other priorities. When Bob Gates left the Defense Department on the way out the door about a year ago, he said, I'm now spending more on healthcare than I am and on weapons. So it's crowding out education, it's crowding out defense, it's crowding out environmental improvements, and so we just got to get a handle on this thing. I don't think anybody in this room would argue that the business model for the delivery of healthcare in the United States is busted and that we got to have a new model. So there's a litany of excuses as to why this is unsolvable, why it's inexorable, why the trend is just going to keep going like that. And I'm, for the sake of time, I'm not going to go through the list today, but, you know, it goes to the graying of society, to our litigious culture and defensive medicine, to all the way down to the bottom line. We're the problem, especially people in Wisconsin who tailgate too much. They like their beer, their brats, their brandy Manhattans, believe it or not, and butterfat, which would be cheese. In fact, I had a guy come up to me. I was at an entrepreneur conference yesterday. Some guy said, I got this great idea. He said, we take the cheese curds and we inject beer into the cheese curds, and this thing is really going to sell. And of course, we deep fry them as well, which is really healthy lifestyle. So there's a litany of excuses, but if you're a CEO like me, you go, okay, I've heard the excuses. What? I still got this problem. What am I going to do about it? So again, I go back to business concepts, and that's how we attack this thing. As I look back on the 9 years, we're a learning organization, two things have come out. The first learning, the major learning was, it's about management. It's not about political science, it's about management science, and I can't get those guys doing the big debates at the federal level to understand that this stuff can be managed. Now, they're dealing up here at 100,000 feet with the access issue and who pays. You know, how do you redistribute income in the United States to pay for PPACA? And that's all up here, but it doesn't. The real reform has to be down here at the grassroots level. So I would make a case that what's been missing is proactive, innovative, aggressive management. The second learning that I had was about 2 or 3 years, and I'm not in the business of managing, aspects of the business equation. I'm managing behavior. And so that was a revelation. And so if you think about it, there's really five behaviors you have to get to. At least that's what we aim at Serigraph. The first one is, how do they utilize? And we already talked about that a little bit. How do they purchase healthcare if they have to buy it? How do they live their lives? We all know that's the biggest impact on health costs. If you've got a chronic disease, do you follow your regimen? So only a third of the diabetics in this country are under control. And lastly, how do you relate to your doctors? The old system is sort of a top-down system, and what the doctor says is what you do. But we all know that it's more collaborative than that, these days, especially because of the internet. You know, people will walk into a primary care doctor with, say, Lyme's disease, and they'll know almost as much about it as he does because they've been on the internet and digging out everything that pertains to their personal situation. And you also know that when you get down to a really critical health issue, like my wife and I did, should she get a lumpectomy or a mastectomy? Does she do radiation or does she do chemo? All of a sudden, the doctor is more than willing and invariably will hand that decision back to you. They'll lay out the options and say, what do you want to do? So it really is a collaborative relationship. It should be a collaborative relationship between patient and doctor, but you got to get your people, your engaged employees, to understand that and act that way. So the goal here is sort of full engagement of the employees on not only their economic behavior, but also their health behavior. You can't ask people to be engaged and be consumers and be intelligent adults in this sphere unless you give them some tools. So I want to spend just a little time on the three, what I call three platforms, the three tool platforms that we offer. There's a lot of moving parts, so you got the old business model that's busted, and really what's evolving here is a new business model for the delivery of healthcare, a new economic model. And there are a lot of moving parts in this model, but I'm going to sort of hang them under these three platforms. And the first is consumer-driven healthcare. The second is what I call proactive primary care. And the third one is centers of value. I already talked about how we took the leap in 2004. And the only point additional that I want to make, there are two points, is so it was a leap of faith for us that behavior would change, utilization would change, purchasing habits would change. But it's now been 9 years, well, 2002, it's almost 10 years now. So there have been four national studies, one by Mercer, one by Aetna, one by Cigna, and a recent one by RAND, and they all came out and showed that the savings from going to a consumer-driven health plan are somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 30%. And the recent one was RAND, and they put it at 30. And furthermore, the people who are engaged because they have a high deductible plan are more likely to use prevention, wellness programs. They're more engaged in their health than the people who are passive recipients. So what was a business risk 8 or 9 years ago is now not. The risk is gone. The stuff is proven. It's audited. You put in a high deductible plan, your costs will go down between 20 and 30%. And I might add that it's an interesting note that all the big insurers like Humana are using consumer-driven plans with their own employees. All the big health providers in Wisconsin, and I'm sure elsewhere, are using, so Aurora and Freighter, who are two big systems, are using consumer-driven plans with their own employees. GE Healthcare, that makes MRI machines and PET scanners, and so has a big foot in the medical world, and is very nervous about doing anything that might appear negative to the healthcare industry. So therefore held off on consumer-driven, had a huge internal debate inside that monster corporation, and they just went consumer-driven with all their own employees. So if the big providers, the big insurers, and the big medical vendors are doing it, I would submit the question, why isn't the government doing it on the public pay side of the equation? So the other thing that you've got to do if you're under that platform of consumer-driven is give people the transparency tools. And we had a big, long conversation about that this morning with the Alaska Healthcare Commission. And the good news there is that there is a very, I won't call it a stampede, but there's a whole lot of action going on the transparency equation. Now, back when we jumped in 2004, there was nothing out there, almost nothing. Well, I've got a woman in my HR department who's got an MBA, and she said, I'll tackle it. And so we were self-insured, and therefore, we had the data points because we were writing the checks. So we went to Blue Cross, and we went to the providers and said, please help us. We're going to put together a Travelocity kind of system for healthcare procedures. And of course, the first answer was, I'm sorry, we can't do that. We have a contract between the insurance company and the provider, and there's a couple of paragraphs in there, a confidentiality clause, that says our discounts are competitive information and therefore confidential. And we just looked at him and said, are you crazy? We're the payers. We're writing the checks. We know what we're paying. It may be your data, but it's our data too. And so we finally, and they were, by the way, publicly professing the need for transparency in the country. So their rhetoric was sort of catching them on their own petard. And so we just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and finally, covertly, in a little back room at Blue Cross in Pewaukee, Wisconsin, we cobbled together a Rube Goldberg kind of transparency model. We started with 10 procedures, which covered about 60% of the costs, and we got it done, proving that it can be done. And so now, now that is sweeping across the country. There are a lot of new entrepreneurs jumping into that space. Companies like Castlight. Castlight just raised $180 million in the Silicon Valley to drill down on both price and quality down to the doctor level. There's a company called Compass that does it along with advocacy. There's a company that jumped out of the Serigraph experiment called Aletheus. So there's a good bunch of companies out there that can offer an employer transparency for their employees, and it's a couple, $3 per member per month. It's not a big price. Meanwhile, the providers, I've seen the train coming, and most of them have some semblance of a transparency system available, although it's usually a little bit of a fuzz sandwich. And the insurers also do have them available, but again, a little bit clunky, a little bit hard to use, a little bit of a rope-a-dope. But it is out there, and if you have some people who can filter through it, you can elicit a good system. Ours is like Travelocity. You punch in hips, up come the 15 providers in Milwaukee that do hips. It has volume. You know, there's a huge correlation between volume and quality, as it should be perfectly obvious. The more you do, the better you get. You don't want a guy that does 3 heart bypasses a year to be number 4. Then we have an ABC rating. We elicit as much quality information as we can get, some of it coming through Medicare, through health grades and Sabimo, some of it coming from places like the Society of Thoracic Surgeons, which will compare the heart hospitals. So we just pull it from wherever we can get it and give them a grade. And then lastly, we have a price range. And the variation, of course, is just enormous. A colonoscopy can vary. We buy them for about $1,500 at the Milwaukee Endoscopy Center. I've seen bills for $8,000 or $9,000. My hip was $23,500, which is the lowest price I've seen. But there, you can pay double or triple that in the Milwaukee market. So there's a huge variation on the price side, which tells you there's no marketplace, there's no discipline. You can't have a variation of 300%. And argue there's any discipline at all. Usually in the economic world, you have one or two things disciplining prices and quality. It's either the marketplace, or if you have a monopoly, duopoly or triopoly, the regulators come in and set prices for you. Healthcare is in no man's land. It's right in the middle. So at least there's some movement now from the marketplace side to get a handle on these costs. I cannot explain, and I've already talked about it, why I've talked to our governor, two governors, and our legislators, why don't you just make the prices you pay for the state employees public information? And they're all over the state of Wisconsin in various buckets, and we'd have a grid, you know, a representative grid of prices for healthcare in Wisconsin, and they don't do it. You could do the same thing with Medicare. In fact, I would even argue that it's public information inherently, and that probably a Freedom of Information suit ought to be filed to make that information public. Okay, so you got to have the transparency tools. Good news is the entrepreneurs are jumping into this space, and you can buy it for a relatively low amount of money. Some of the information is coming from all claims databases in some of the states that is being contemplated here in Alaska, and it does make the job easier for the entrepreneurs to get the data. In absence of that, and some of the insurers, by the way, are giving the entrepreneurs the Heisman, no, you're not getting the data. United is famous for that. They come to the self-insured payers like myself, and we give them our claims dump. And so they start off with the self-insured guys and get it going, and if enough of those guys do it, there'll be enough transparency out there, and you hit the tipping point, and you'll have available information. Okay, so that's the first platform. The second one, there's another stampede going on. By the way, I think half of the large employers in the country now have consumer-driven plans, and I think it's 41% of all employers, if you include the small ones, and I think 50% of the employees, the number I've seen in the private sector, are now in consumer-driven. I understand that number is way low in Alaska. Somewhere I heard this morning, some about 7%. So you guys are out of sync with what's going on across the country. The second platform is a relatively new one that has not been remarked upon much yet, and it's called proactive primary care. And the New York, I started getting a whiff of what was going on there with a company in Wisconsin called Quad Graphics. They're the second biggest printer in the world. They do magazine printing. I don't compete with them, but they're friends and they're a very innovative company, and I've benchmarked on them for years. They put in on-site clinics for their employees about 23 years ago, and they did it strictly as a benefit, sort of a maternalistic benefit for both recruiting and retention. And I kept asking them, well, how is it playing out on the economic side? I understand it's a great device for on the medical side, on the health side, but what about the economics? Well, they didn't care. They were just sort of top, you know, it was just a benefit. Finally, about 4 years ago, they brought in Mercer, the auditing company, and they did a study, and lo and behold, they had been right on the national average 23 years ago. They were now, flash forward 23 years, 33% below the national average. And Milwaukee was about 8 or 10 points above the national average, so they were like 40 points below the regional average. So it was working. And so we tried to deduce why it was working. And I figured out two things as we kept probing this. And the first is, one's on the economic side and one's on the medical side. On the economic side, what you've really done is taken that vertically integrated supply chain that the big providers have assembled, and you're basically disintegrating the vertically integrated supply chain. You're taking back the front end, primary care, and putting it on site. And so all of a sudden now it's your doctor and your medical, by the way, we've got nurse practitioners at Serigraph, you've got nurse coaches, we've got a chiropractor, we've got a dietitian, and so does Quad. And so it's your doctor ordering the tests, and we buy our MRIs for $525, not $3,000, which you can pay easily in Milwaukee. It's your doctor ordering the specialists. And by the way, we're the only country in the world that has a specialty-driven system. Every other country where they're spending 8 to 10% of GDP is based on primary care, primarily. It's your doctor writing the scripts, or your nurse practitioner, or your PA, and it's your doctor ordering the admits to hospitals. So you got basically your medical team is also your economic team, and they're the gatekeeper into this big, expensive, specially driven system that we have in the United States. So that's the economic side. You're back in charge of the supply chain. On the medical side, every seminar you go to in this field will tell you that 80% of the costs are caused by 20% of the people that have the 15 chronic diseases. And so clearly, if you profess to be a management expert, like me and my team do, you can't manage health costs if you aren't dealing with the 80 points. And I don't think you can deal with the 80 points by sermonizing with your employees and putting out passive brochures and websites talking about wellness. It's a contact sport. It's got to be a face-to-face personal interaction between a doctor and his team who really care about the person, have a long-term relationship, and want to solve the problem. So for the first time, when you have your own coaches on-site, convenient, and by the way, it's free, you are now starting to get a serious dialogue about fixing diabetes or getting after obesity or hypertensivity. And so I guess I believe in mandates sometimes, a little inconsistent. So my mandate was I want 100% of our diabetics under control for the A1C test and the other two blood tests. And we're getting there. Jeez, I'm going to get the hook here. I'm just getting going. Okay, well, we'll just do. I used to be an editor of a newspaper, so I'll do a little editing on the fly here. I think he took up most of my time, don't you, with his introduction? Because I had this time for 45 minutes. But okay, so you get control of the chronic diseases in a serious way. And we're pretty close to, we're more than 90% of our diabetics under control. One of the surprising things, I was talking, okay, so we're doing all this stuff free. And by the way, I'm paying about the same amount for a concierge doctor on site. So my people are getting Mayo type executive physicals, just like fat cat execs used to get. We get them on site. And so is this stuff working? So I was trying to get a metric. I'm a metric guy. How do we know it's working? So we said, why don't we do a claims dig on hospital admissions? is we're really doing a good job on catastrophic illnesses, or chronic diseases that become catastrophic. We should have cut that down. So sure enough, we were cruising along through about 2000 to 2007 at about 71 admits per 1,000 lives, right on the national average. All of a sudden, it started dropping, and we were 34 in 2010. We were 41 last year, and we're trending about that level in 2012. So we've cut our hospital admits in half. So I would submit to you that that's a stunning number. And if I were the CFO of a big hospital system and I had a couple billion dollars worth of triple B rated bonds, I think I'd be a little uptight. Okay, so the last one, and I could cover this a little more quickly, is centers of value. That's the last platform. There are a good number of people in the provider system that are going after best practices in a serious managerial Six Sigma lean discipline kind of way. It started at ThetaCare in Appleton, Wisconsin, Appleton Memorial. They now have 60 hospital systems in their network of lean providers, including the Cleveland Clinic and Gunderson in Wisconsin. And they are driving out waste. They call it muda in Japanese, driving out the waste, driving out defects, and in the process, improving quality and lowering costs. One of the things that came out of our all claims base in Wisconsin is called the Wisconsin Collaborative on Healthcare Quality. And I kept pushing them for outcomes and pushing them. They finally came out with the outcomes on 3 pneumonias and 3 hearts. Y-axis, quality, X-axis, price. In the old days, the conventional wisdom was that high price equals high quality. Just not true. The Wall Street Journal did a study of scan shops around the country and found there was no correlation. They sent out a radiologist and an investigative reporter and found no correlation. That's 7 years ago. Today, up in the upper left quadrant, high quality, low cost, there's a whole bunch of providers. They tend to be the lean providers. And I would, their costs are typically for elective procedures are tend to be 30 or 40% below. So we're buying our knee replacements for $27,000. And I'm buying them from Dr. Eggert, who is a friend of mine. I used to play tennis with him when he was 20 and I was 40. He's an old man now. He called up and said, John, I've done 138 knee replacements in my new orthopedic clinic in Appleton, Wisconsin. I've had no defects and no readmits. And I said, well, fine, give us a price, $27,000. And so we negotiated a bundle price. And what's wrong with that picture? So we're steering, and we pay our people $2,000 if they'll go to one of our centers of value. If you do a colonoscopy, we give you $500. We had one couple go in together. I thought that was cute. sort of like a Guernsey barn. I don't know how it looked. We're not worried about overutilization. So we steer our people to these centers of value, and some people ask me, well, is there any legal liability there because you're steering? And I said, I'd rather stand up in front of a jury and say we steered towards the best providers, and I'll take that risk. The final thought there is that, there's a sort of a moral issue, an ethical issue beyond the legal issue, and that is if you don't steer, you're benignly letting your people go to the other end of the bell-shaped curve where they're not doing a very good job. So I would submit you have a moral obligation to steer to the best providers. All right, I'll go wrap it up. So just add up the numbers. You can save 20 to 30% by going consumer-driven, big numbers. You can save another 20 to 30% by installing an on-site clinic. And there are a number of providers who will do it on a part-time basis as much as you need. And lastly, you can save another 30, 40% on elective procedures by going to centers of value. So those are big levers that would like to suggest that at least we can bend the inflation curve, the hyperinflation curve, and maybe someday even flatline it. Safeway claims they have flatlined costs for their 200,000 employees by concentrating on, they call it reference pricing. They're only paying $1,500 for a colonoscopy, and secondly, by concentrating on the chronic diseases. So this stuff can work. I would submit to you that it works because it works for the employees. It's a win-win-win. You know, they've got fewer fewer or no premium increases. Their HRAs are building up. Some HSA accounts that have now have more than $100,000 in them. You got lower charges against your deductibles and copays because you're buying right. You got an out-of-pocket max for catastrophic coverage. You're getting rebates from our MedSave program. You got free prevention, wellness, and primary care. You got free operations if you'll partake of medical tourism. You have an absence of illness, which means that you have fewer lost paydays. You have no crowding out of raises like you get when the benefits are out of control. We have profit sharing. That's higher when you control costs. Our people are smart enough to know that if we're controlling our costs, we're competitive and their job security is better. And finally, it's totally proven that a healthy couple in retirement will spend about $250,000 less than an unhealthy couple. So it's win-win-win-win-win for the employees who are in it together with me. The closing thought, this is not ephemeral stuff. This is not a patch job. This is a fundamental fix to the system that's busted because it's based on almost philosophically sound principles. Employee engagement, they're acting like responsible adults like they do in every other sector of their life. It's consumerism and individual responsibility. You're basing it on free market dynamics. You're basing it on good old business principles like controlling the supply chain. And you're basing it on keeping people healthy and out of the hospital. What's wrong with that? Thanks for indulging my obsession. I feel better. I hope you do.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans with John Tornis, author of The Company That Solved Healthcare, The Serograph Prescription. He was recorded speaking at a Commonwealth North Forum in Anchorage on October 11th. Following his talk, Mr. Tornis responded to questions submitted by audience members.
I got a lot of questions, and they were awfully good. So let me consolidate into a couple of categories.
Sure.
The first category is, were you able, or how do you know, the impact financially of the changes that you've made on your employees? That is to say, were they somehow forced to pay more for the healthcare coverage by the changes you made? And second, what was the impact on their health? Have you monitored that? Do you know whether their health status is better now or worse now or the same from before the changes?
Well, I just ran down the financial side of it. It's just a total win for these guys, you know. So on the health side, and again, there's a lot of moving parts here, and you can't cover it in 45 minutes. But we actually now, we have mandatory health risk assessments, and we're turning that into a powerful management tool. And so, you know, you do the blood metrics, and then they sit down and they get a coaching. We're turning that into a three-year health plan for every employee. When you have mandatory assessments, you now have the population data. So we've taken our cholesterol from 207 down to 193. We've dropped our systolic blood pressure by 3 points. So yes, our people are getting healthier. Obviously, the fact that we have half as many hospital admits tends to point that out too. Now, there are other things going on there. There's a move towards outpatient versus inpatient. So I'm not going to claim victory on that total drop, but obviously we've had something to do with it. So it's a win on the financial side, and it's a win on the health side. It's a virtuous circle, really. I mean, there's no losers here except the guys that are not providing very good service.
There was a second set of questions regarding the impact of the changes in the federal health care law on your program. Do you foresee how that's going to change your ability to carry this out?
Well, in my disclaimer, I said I'm not an expert on PPAC, but obviously I've been in and around it like the rest of you have. And, you know, I maintain it's largely irrelevant to people that are going to keep providing health care. I mean, it doesn't change my life much. I had to add the 26. We already in Wisconsin had it up to 25, so we had to add the 26-year-olds. I added a dozen kids, but they're cheap because they're healthy. So I think it added $20,000 to the bill. That mandates prevention and wellness. We were already free on prevention and wellness, so it really didn't change much. You know, they're really dealing with the access issue for the uninsured, and that's not where I live. Every estimate I've seen is that, you know, that the ACA is going to drive up costs by at least 1 or 2 points. I'm sure it's going to be more than that. So it really is not an issue if you're going to keep providing health care. Now, I talked to a whole bunch of small business guys who were in the question, Am I going to keep providing health care or not? Am I going to maybe go to a defined contribution plan, which, you know, they maybe give you here's $7,000, go buy your own policy, and you get a little subsidy from the government to back that up. But that better add up to a pretty good number, because the average price tag per employee in the country is $15,000. So if I give you $7,000 and the government throws in another $2,000 for a subsidy, you know, the person's still got to pony up $6,000 for the equivalent plan.
Thanks. So here's an interesting question. With a high deductible health plan, HSA plan, how can a company implement proactive primary care on site for free and stay within IRS guidelines?
I'm not going to answer the IRS question. There's lawyers having a field day running seminars on the 2,700 pages of ACA and the 10 to 20,000 of regs that are coming out. Most, half of them aren't out yet. So I really don't need to get into the IRS part of it. But there's no contradiction whatsoever between a high deductible consumer-driven plan and an on-site clinic. It's just that you're providing the primary care free, and we still have a wraparound network. In my case, it was Blue Cross, to go and buy the secondary and tertiary care. So they're totally compatible.
Almost the last question. I got a few of these, so I'll ask it of you if you have any comment about it. Medical tourism, what is it? Do we want more of it? Do we want less of it? Does that have anything to do with your program?
I understand up here in Alaska, you guys have been known to fly people to Seattle more than, and so it exists up here. As you probably know, 6 million Americans go abroad for surgeries or procedures, mostly out-of-pocket stuff like plastic surgery. Blue Cross came to Serigraph and asked if we would be a beta site for their medical tourism plan, and they had picked out the Apollo Hospital in Bangalore. And I said, yes, we've got a plant in Bangalore, so I thought some of my people would do it. We only have about 25 elective surgeries a year, and so far we've had no takers. And that was pretty much true what Blue Cross found as well, so they sort of disbanded it. We still use a broker for medical tourism, but it tends to be regional in the United States. So if a guy's got a surgery and he's willing to travel a couple hours to a very good place, we'll broker a deal. So we bought a discectomy at Gunderson Health 3 hours away for $12,500. Would have cost us an average of $18,000 in Milwaukee. Me and my employees saved $5,500. So we're doing that. So I think, you know, almost every other industry has gone global, and I'm sure that medical treatments are going to go global. They already are. It's just a matter of time till Americans get comfortable traveling abroad for not just out-of-pocket stuff, but stuff where they're covered. I did, when I was in Bangalore visiting, I planned it. I said, I'm going to go over to that Apollo Hospital and check it out. So I walked up, and there was a sign. The letters up on that sign were about 10 feet high, and it went AP blank LLO. The O had dropped out of the sign, and I'm thinking, this is not a good start for a Six Sigma, no defect hospital. So I get in there, and there must have been about 8,000 people in that hospital. It's a really good hospital, but I mean, there are people everywhere. So I asked them for their quality system, and they handed me all their docs on quality, but they hadn't populated it with data. And so it was a 2008 system, and there was no data. And I went, I don't think we're sending people here, because they were doing the talk on Six Sigma quality, but they weren't doing the walk. So I think, yeah, those places have got to be checked out. So it's coming, and it's more on a regional basis. The regional tourism is very much there. We steer people all over the Midwest now, searching out these centers of value, and they often are the lean providers.
Okay, thank you. So final question, any comment about the Packers?
I grew up in Green Bay. My dad was on the Packer board for 30-some years, and he wrote the first history of the Packers. There have been 100 books written since. They all footnote my dad. So it's in my DNA. It's very painful this year. I don't know. Frankly, nobody can quite figure out what's going on. So
thank you very much, Mr.
Chairman. We'll be there.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with John Torrenes, author of The Company That Solved Healthcare, The Serigraph Prescription. He responded to questions submitted by audience members following his talk recorded at a Commonwealth North Forum in Anchorage on October 11th, 2012. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans at alaskapublic.org. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Addressing Alaskans' theme song, Trampolines, is by Patrick Lee. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.